This is the truth of it. Fighting leads to killing, and killing gets to warring, and that was damn near the death of us all. Look at us now, busted up and everyone talking about hard rain. But we've learned by the dust of them all, Barter Town's learned. Now when men get to fighting, it happens here, and it finishes here. Two men enter, one man leaves. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, dying time's here.
Listen up, all you late night Nighthawks. It's time for the most dangerous man on late night internet radio. It's Tyler Hollywood, and he's ready to bring you to the bad side.
What do they find the best result?
I don't know what they find in this picture about Bubbies.
I find nothing of basketball, Bubbies.
Neither do I. I like Bubbies.
I like Bubbies a lot.
Yes, Bubbies are good.
I like vagina.
Vagina's good too.
People should simply not be allowed into the country unless they speak English. Period. Oh, and under no circumstances should they be allowed to drive taxis.
You come pay me for egg roll right now.
Oh, you do have me, Lindy. Very good.
But you know you eat my egg roll, too.
Lindy, you know I have been forced to fuck you. I have to fight for the
ass. Speaking of time, I'm going to go brush my horse. And yes, that is a euphemism. Exactly. You see me doing it.
I've never met anyone more wrong in my life.
And now, live from the CIC on the USS Hollywood, he's a revenue-generating and entertainment portion of the show, ladies and gentlemen, Tyler Hollywood.
I absolutely hate the fact that I fell asleep and took a goddamn nap. Seriously! It just pisses me off! Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the program. My name is Tyler Effin Hollywood. I host a show called The Bad Side Live. You're listening to it right now. Live. July 1st, 2010, 9:06 p.m. here on the East Coast. That's right, sitting off the Atlantic coast on the USS Hollywood bundled up in my CIC. It's nice and cool out here today. Got a nice breeze going on, a little bit of sunshine, coupled with some rainstorms. It's kept it cool, it's kept it nice. Unfortunately, apparently, it made me tired as a baby. That's right, I took a nap. I'm not very happy that I took a nap. I got too much to do to take a nap during the day. I take naps at night. Forget about sleep. I'm a man who does not really sleep. I take 6-hour naps because I'm constantly getting up and turning over. Maybe this is why it could quite possibly explain why I stumble over my words just there. But it could quite possibly explain why I'm so frickin' cranky all the time. Can't even keep a straight face. Seriously, I took a nap earlier tonight. I had some dinner. Maybe it was food coma, I don't know. But I had some dinner after getting out of work. Put my feet up just for a couple of minutes. And I ended up falling asleep. On the couch. And it seemed to me I was awake for most of it. Because I would open up my eyes, I'd look outside, oh man, a little bit of sunshine out there, looks nice, it's cool, breeze is blowing in through the door, this is comfortable. Yeah. And I'm awake, but I'm tired. I'd fall back asleep. Now, I thought this nap might have been 15, 20 minutes long. No! It was a waste of time. I think possibly 2.5 hours. Maybe not that much. At least 1.5 hours, though. At least that. Possibly longer. And I got up and I'm groggy and I'm stumbling around. Like it was 2 o'clock in the... Well, 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm wide awake. But like it was 5 o'clock in the morning and the cat was driving me nuts to feed her. That type of stumbling around. You gotta pee. Cat's underneath your feet, meowing. You're groggy. You can only see out of one eye. You're drooling because your chin is half numb. Well, maybe you guys don't have the chin problem, but I do because it's huge. But that's what I kind of understand. I don't like naps. Why do I take them? And I know what somebody's going to toss out there. They're going to say, oh, well, your body was telling you you're tired. When do I listen to my body? Never. I tell my body what to do. That's right. I have control over my penis. Did you know that? I don't have to have that doing all the thinking for me. If it's hard in public, it's because I want it to be. Seriously. I'm not kidding. I may chortle at that, but I'm not kidding. But getting back to this nap, I'm groggy. See, I still can't see out of my left eye, clearly. I think I've got all the sleepy seeds. Well, there's a few there, but... I mean, I have to take a shower. I'm going to be taking a shower right after the show. And for you ladies out there, that's a bonus vision for you. All right? Tyler's throwing you a little bone there. Not a literal one, but a nice little vision of me in the shower. You can take that with you at 10 o'clock. For a few minutes, because I'm going to have to snap out of this. I got too much to do. I wasted 1.5 hours earlier on a nap. I don't like naps. I don't want to waste my time taking a nap. And I know there's a whole bunch of people out there that say, oh, I love taking a good 15-minute power nap. What the hell is 15 minutes going to do? How is that going to refresh your body? When I take a 15-minute break, when I'm working for, let's say, an electrician or something like that in my consulting job, we're required to take these 15-minute breaks and half-hour breaks for lunch. When I take that 15-minute break, all I do is sit, have some water. That's how I revitalize. I don't take no cat nap somewhere. I don't curl up with a binky and a blanket. I'm not a baby. I think I can sit for 15 minutes, chit-chat, have some water, and refresh that way. Take a little bit off the feet. That's a 15-minute break. You don't take power naps. And these big lawyers and CEOs people like that, they take power naps. Oh, I had a great power nap this afternoon. 20 minutes I was fresh as a daisy. I was able to get back to work. Yeah, well, it's called a 15-minute break. You don't need to sleep through it. Seriously, I don't see the benefits of any kind of power nap. 15 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever they are. And significantly wasting your time like I did this afternoon is buzzer worthy. All right? Never waste your time. That is true, little Miss Maine. I am your protector. All right, folks, we got a lot to talk about. We got a lot of things to do. Got about 1 million things to do. But we'll be right back to do that. Here's Nine Inch Nails. Can't see out of your left eye? Slurred speech? Numb parts of your face? I don't think you have nap grumpiness. I think you had a stroke. Thank you, Psycho Rabbit. Now I gotta go check my blood pressure. Well, welcome back to the show. I was off checking my Gmail account. That's another place where I get some mail. So it's actually, Tyler at Talk Radio X just gets forwarded. Little behind the scenes secret there for you. Hate giving away those little secrets. At any rate, I was checking mail. And I got a quick comment over there. It says, what do you think you've learned from the BP oil spill? I don't want to say this doesn't affect me, because it does. I mean, it affects everybody. Reminded of a quote here recently by Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen, who's supposedly a professional at this oil spill or environmental disaster-type cleanup. He says, "I've said time and again that nothing good happens when oil is on the water." So what have I learned from the Gulf of Mexico oil spill? Here's 10 things I think I've learned from the Gulf of Mexico oil spill. The most important job that any president has in any crisis is to find out whom to blame for what and lambaste them on television. This is what the man calls leadership. The United States has a Minerals Management Service Department, which, along with the Vitamins Management Service Department, exists primarily to oversee that American children finish their damn vegetables and wash their nasty little hands. In a related story, Minerals Management Service is the name for a new crime drama on CBS featuring Dirk Benedict. It's coming this fall. What else have I learned from the BP Gulf of Mexico oil spill? Listening to women constantly and consistently say the word spew kind of turns me on a little. right there. See what I'm talking about? The judges even like it. The most BP will have to pay out for damages, according to U.S. law, is $2.075 billion. In retrospect, members of Congress now think capping the punitive and economic damages for offshore drilling may not have been the smartest move. Our leaders are total fucking idiots. And here's a side note. I love listening to senators and congressmen vehemently assault laws they put into place 10 years ago. Reminds me why I vote. Because I'm stupid. What else have I learned? Well, I've learned that Tarball is more than just a nickname for my chubby black friend Marcus. It's also something that regularly washes up into the floor of beaches. Sorry, Marcus, I had to get that in there. The main prognosticators as regards to the future of spilled oil traveling in the Gulf represent my cousin's alma mater, the University of South Florida, which is located in West Central Florida. Of all people, they gave him an academic scholarship and once hired a member of the active terrorist cell to teach calculus. USF sources close to me say that the recently leaked oil could end up traveling. Really, anywhere. Yeah, it's oil. It's unpredictable. What else have I learned? Despite the fact that I've heard the word over 700 times in the last few weeks, I have no idea what a plume is. Actually, I lie. I know what a plume is. No matter how good it makes you feel, scrubbing oily pelicans does almost nothing to help the environment. You could literally help the environment more by not driving to the shore to scrub oily pelicans. I know this because I consulted the environmental science department at the University of South Florida. Motto, we have facts and snacks. What else have I learned? Well, offshore is one word. Seriously, look it up. According to the crazy, drunken, homeless guy that panhandles outside my office, this entire spill would have never happened if Corey Haim were still alive. Furthermore, Jim Joyce would have never blown that call at first base in Detroit if the oil spill had never happened. And Willis, apparently more often than not, was talking about stuff that Arnold didn't really want to hear. And finally, I will keep you up to date with this as I learn more because I am super awesome and, well, you know, for that, you're totally welcome. anybody listen to the Irreverent Radio Show on Wednesday nights right after this show? It's on 10 to midnight. Apparently somebody does, because they asked me this afternoon, a little Skype message. By the way, if you have Skype, you can reach me at Talk Radio X. You can either call me using that nice little peer-to-peer system, or you can just send me a text if you want, besides using the email. And of course, you can call 661-349-8255, 661-349-TALK. That should get you right into the station here. Anyway, I got this little text in today. It said, I heard you last night in the Irreverent Radio Show. Did you really mean that when you said you're calling in to talk about your future ex-wife, Lindsay Lohan? That's kind of you. Look, it was a joke. All right? I don't think I'd want to touch Lindsay Lohan with a 10-foot pole, much less a 5-foot pole. I don't even think I'd want to use a 20-foot pole with that. I certainly wouldn't be using my pole to touch Lindsay Lohan. No. I wasn't thinking that. It was a joke. It was to set up a couple of jokes, which, I might add, I thought were pretty damn funny. Thank you. And it was a great show, by the way, to listen to, the Irreverent Radio Show. Girl Sean, Guy Sean, Rick, Big Rick D, and plus all their little studio guests and call-ins they had last night. If you missed it, look for the replay right here on Talk Radio X. And, of course, you can probably find it at their Facebook posting. You can find their archives. All right? Speaking of archives, make sure you grab mine off the Talk Radio X website. They're fun. They're exciting. There's something to do. All right. Now, everybody knows, at least everybody who knows me well, and that's pretty much everybody in the world, knows that I am super patriotic. The 4th of July is kind of like my Christmas. Granted, I don't get gifts or anything like that. I'm not big on that. When my birthday comes around, my mother always asks me like a week before, so what do you want for your birthday? Ah, shit, I'm turning another year older? Thanks for the reminder, Ma. Come on. And I usually just say, you know, I just want to get through the day. At any rate, I look forward more to the 4th of July than I really do my birthday or Easter or any of those holidays. I mean, it's not to say I don't like Christmas. I still get giddy over Christmas. Ever since Santa did get me that stripper. But this Sunday, July 4th, I gotta say, we will once again celebrate our nation's founding, marking the day in 1776 when the Continental Congress formally adopted the Declaration of Independence. Now, the Declaration of Independence, folks, was intended to be an official statement explaining why the 13 American colonies, the 13 original colonies, had declared their independence from Great Britain. Excuse me. In the years following its passage, however, the statement of principles about the rights of man grew to mean so much more. Think about it. America became the only country in history founded, as Leo Strauss explains, in explicit opposition to Machiavellian principles, by which he meant crass power politics. Instead, America was founded on a set of clearly expressed, self-evident truths. Thomas Jefferson said the Declaration was intended to be an expression of the American mind. And indeed, no document since has so succinctly and so eloquently spelled out the spirit of America. Now, our country has evolved out of that timeless truth expressed in the Declaration of Independence to develop a distinct character and set of values that distinguishes us from even other Western democracies. I gotta say, folks, this holiday, it is worth taking a look at how several key phrases from the Declaration of Independence have served as definitional statements about the aspirations of our country, of America, and how those words of our founding fathers have affected America in the 234 years since they were written. Let's take a look. All men are created equal. Now, the Founding Fathers, who authored the Declaration, were the first people in the history of the world ever to express our natural equality as a principle of government in such an unqualified way. Though neither the Constitution that followed nor the Founders personally quite fulfilled the promise of those words, because we all know the history of our country, it has since been the project of our country to accomplish those words and those goals. All men are created equal. America came through to recognize that we are not all literally equal. I mean, let's face it, we are born with different capabilities and attributes, and to different stations in life, different situations. The words of the Founders capture the truth that we must treat each other as equals. We are created equal in the sense that all men, and of course women, when I say men, I'm talking about humans, have the same natural rights granted to them by the Creator. We are all under the same law. Now, this powerful statement of universal rights was used by abolitionists as a moral cudgel to rid the United States of slavery, an institution explicitly at odds with the truth expressed in said Declaration of Independence. And Abraham Lincoln consistently evoked the phrase in this famous Peoria speech against the Kansas and Nebraska Act, and later during the Lincoln-Douglas debates. As President Lincoln again included the phrase in the Gettysburg Address as the moral underpinning by which the Union should be redirected. Later, during the women's suffrage movement and civil rights struggles in the 60s, leaders such as Martin Luther King used the powerful phrase as a reminder to America that separate, which is treating people differently under the law based on their race, was not equal. Now, leaders such as Lincoln and King believe that as America's founding political document, the Declaration of Independence is our moral guide with which to interpret the Constitution. They saw that we cannot divorce the law from the moral underpinnings that legitimize it. But by what authority does that moral underpinning exist? And there's four key words. Endowed by their Creator. The core contention of the Declaration of Independence and the principle of natural rights upon which America was founded is that there is a higher moral order upon which the laws of man must be based. The Declaration asserts the existence of the laws of nature and nature's God, which had a clear meaning in the 18th century England and America. It referred to the will of God as displayed by the natural order of the world. John Locke, who was widely read by leaders of colonial America, wrote in his second treatise on government, and I quote, "Thus the law of nature stands as an eternal rule of all man, legislatures as well as others. The rules that they make for other men's actions must be conformable to the law of nature, i.e. to the will of God. William Blackstone, who was arguably the single greatest influence on the creation of the American legal system, wrote in Commentaries on the Laws of England, and I quote him, "As man depends absolutely upon his Maker for everything, it is necessary that he should at all points conform to his Maker's will." Now, America's founding was heavily influenced by the English and Scottish Enlightenment, which specifically included a space for God and religion in its conceptions of rights, freedom, and human reason. Now, this gave the American Revolution a distinctly different character than the French Revolution, which, in its most radical phase, sought freedom by casting off all authority and remnants of the existing order, especially God. In the American formulation, as declared by our founders, man's rights come from God, not from man's ability to reason them into existence. Man does not depend on government to grant him rights through a bureaucratic process, but instead to secure those rights that have been granted to him by the Creator. In other words, power comes from the Creator to you, which is then loaned to the government. Thus, the Declaration states that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. The English and the Scottish Enlightenment's conscious inclusion of a space for God and religion had another key influence on the American system of government. Whereas the French Revolution believed it could create a new man through government, education, and indoctrination, the American Founding Fathers had a profound sense of the fallen nature of man. Thus, they created a system of checks and balances that would serve as a restraint on those in power. And how about the pursuit of happiness? Here we, again, we see the influence of the English and the Scottish Enlightenment on the Founding Fathers. For writers such as John Locke and Francis Hutcheson, the term happiness meant something close to wisdom and virtue. It did not mean hedonism or other shallow pleasures, such as the term is too often confused to mean today, with the me generation and the I generation. It is also essential to note that the Declaration does not say that we have the right to have happiness provided to us. It says we have the right to pursue happiness, an active verb. As I point out in jest sometimes to on this show to people that are listening, it says nothing about happiness stamps. It does not say some people can be too happy and that the government should make them less happy out of sense of fairness. The Founding Fathers understood that government could not give people happiness, that it was instead up to the government to create an environment where the people could best work to achieve their dreams and their goals. As AEI's Arthur Brooks has pointed out, polls of wealthy and successful people show that the harder one works for that success, the greater happiness one derives from it. Not always what the end result is, it's the work they put into it. And America's a land where, through hard work, determination, and entrepreneurism, people can achieve their big dreams. The right of the pursuit of happiness, spelled out in the Declaration, is a definitional statement about the nature of America that has attracted people from all over the world to come here to pursue those dreams. So who are we on this July 4th coming up? A bedrock belief of American conservatism is a respect for the established traditions and values of American culture. Now, conservatives believe from the time the first colonists landed in Jamestown, America took on a unique culture and set of values and have set us apart from our European cousins. A belief in natural rights, strong religious faith and values, the importance of the work ethic, and a spirit of community that manifests itself in a belief in limited government and strong civic participation. It is this set of beliefs, these truths, enshrined in the Declaration of Independence that have made America so successful, and they deserve, ladies and gentlemen, to be protected. Whereas the modern left is using every lever of power at its disposal to dismantle our unique American civilization and replace it with a secular bureaucratic culture in which government is big, citizens are small, and our rights are defined by the state rather than endowed by our Creator. Equality under the law is being discarded in favor of equality of results. Consent of the governed is being subverted in an increasingly overbearing federal bureaucracy of imperial judiciary. And the pursuit of happiness is being undermined by a redistributive welfare state that kills the can-do entrepreneurial spirit of America. And we've seen that. In the last 50 years, we've become a credit-driven country and not a productive one. This July 4th, I hope you will take time to read the Declaration of Independence and consider the truths about our rights and freedoms contained within. I hope you will take the time to appreciate the sacrifices made by the founding generation and generations since to secure our liberty. But most of all, I hope you will take the time to appreciate the greatness of America and how hard we must be willing to work to preserve that which makes it so very special. Going to give a couple of shout-outs here to some of the listeners that have checked in this evening. Just barely caught up with most of them. James, hello, sir. I'm glad you're listening in before work. Steve out there in Tucson, Arizona. September 3rd, dude? Perfect. That's right around my birthday, which is September 5th. Psycho Rabbit, you know what? I'm going to really have to take you down. All right? 44 a couple years ago. I'm 44 right now, this year. It's my magnum year. Stuff it. Bite me, whatever. Also, Melissa in Maine and Stephanie over there in Philly, my little Philly in Philly. Hello, welcome, good evening, love you all. Entire time that Barack Obama was out kissing babies, shaking hands, and saying, how do you do? Trying to get your vote. He said consistently, yes, we can. So what's happened to that? President Barack Obama said today that U.S. borders cannot be secured with fences and border patrols. It won't work, he said. Obama made the statement in a speech at American University in Washington, D.C., in which he called on Congress to enact a comprehensive immigration reform law that would include a pathway for legal status for illegal immigrants, or what critics have called, and I have called, amnesty. Here's a quote from Mr. Barack Obama, bin Biden. Even as we are committed to doing what's necessary to secure our borders, even without passage of the new law, these are those who argue that we should not move forward with any other elements of reform until we have fully sealed our borders. But our borders are just too vast for us to be able to solve the problem only with fences and border patrols. It won't work. Our borders will not be secure as long as our limited resources are devoted to not only stopping gangs and potential terrorists, but also the hundreds of thousands who attempt to cross each year simply to find work. Obama also contended in the speech that the borders are more secure now than they have been in the past two decades. He quotes, or I quote, the southern border is more secure today than any time in the past 20 years, he said. His comprehensive immigration reform plan would demand responsibility from illegal immigrants. That right there is a problem. Responsibility from illegal immigrants. Since when do people who do things illegally have any kind of responsibility, Mr. President? He goes on to say, we have to demand responsibility from people living here illegally. They must be required to admit that they broke the law. They should be required to register to pay their taxes, to pay a fine, to learn English. Mr. President, that's like asking a kid to tell the truth about breaking the vase in mom's living room. It's not going to happen. They're not going to take the responsibility because they did something illegal. He also says we can create a pathway for legal status that is fair, reflective of our values, and works. Ah, you know what? You know what I hear? I hear the cry of surrender. I hear the cry of appeasement and capitulation from the left once again. The dear leader has deemed that it can't be done, so don't even try. Just bring all those people in and give them Democrat voting credentials. Ooh! I tell you, he and the rest of this administration have failed in their oaths of office and should be removed from said offices. I mean, really, I've seen worse heavyweight fighters stay in the ring longer than it did to take this guy to throw in the frickin' towel on this particular agenda problem. Seriously, all this guy ever seems to do in office is try to position himself for a better exit from said office in 2012. He already knows he's not going to last. He's not going to get voted back in again. He knows this. He's accepted that. So what's he doing? Posturing. He's tough on Gitmo, soft on illegal immigration. He's a Muslim sympathizer. How much more do we need? How much more can we take? By the way, Mr. Obama bin Biden, I tell you what people think about your border concerns. There's a recent Gallup poll conducting in May shows that 9 out of 10 Americans say it is moderately to extremely important to them for the federal government to take steps this year to secure the border against illegal immigration. Lest I remind you, people in office, you are here to help govern what we need done. 9 out of 10 people say we need to get this done, and Mr. Barack Obama is saying, no, we can't. Also, 61% of Americans say that they are very concerned that illegal immigrants are putting an unfair burden on U.S. schools, hospitals, and government services. This is way up from just a couple of years ago. Have I had anything to do with it? God, I hope so. So let me ask a question. Why? If 9 out of 10 Americans want the border secured Why isn't this done? Is it corrupt government? Also, it's time that Mexico took some responsibility for its own people instead of suing our United States states. I'm sick to death of my taxes taking care of people who, for the most part, pay no taxes, yet get everything for free. When Americans can't get anything. Or, not even just Americans, but people here legally going through the immigration process. They can't get anything either. Now, I may run a semi-successful business, and I work hard at a consulting job, but I'm like everybody else. I'm kind of poor. I got bills. If it isn't one thing, it's another. I've got a bad back. I'm getting older, but it's not stopping me. But to get help sometimes is hard. I can't afford the help. I can't even afford this new health care plan. But an illegal. I know where they can get everything they want for free. So my question is, what's wrong with this picture? And Mr. President, are you going to stand there reading off your teleprompters and say that we can't do this? You're going to continue to say this. Oh, we can't seal the borders. Well, then one question, Mr. President. Whatever happened to yes, we can? Coming up next here on the Bad Side Live, of course, in just a couple of minutes, I'm going to have the Angry Teddy Bear. He is back in the CIC here and ready to do some more damage. I just wanted to say a quick shout out to Sir Daryl, who's one of our morning show hosts. His show can be heard from 1 p.m. in the afternoon to 3 p.m. in the afternoon, 1 to 3. New time for Sir Daryl Radio Experience. Most recently, Daryl... I'm going to have to get this guy's autograph, maybe have him send, like, maybe a couple of dozen headshots, all signed, you know, with love from Daryl. Because this guy was recently featured in a one of those VH1 behind-the-scenes things there with Jennifer Hudson. And Sir Daryl had a good 5 minutes of fame there. He's still 10 minutes short, but, you know, just look at the guy. All right? So, Sir Daryl, if you want to check it out, go to Talk Radio X. See if he's posted yet the video, or just check out Sir Daryl Radio Experience on Facebook, and I'm sure he's probably posting all the videos he possibly can. If you missed it, he posted some last week, so check it out. He was on VH1 behind the scenes, whatever it was. I'm sure he'll correct me on that. Usually does. But Sir Daryl and his 5 minutes of fame. Speaking of Sir Daryl, let's get to somebody who is not a big Sir Daryl fan. Ladies and gentlemen, here's the bear.
All right, thank you, everybody. Let me get here in my chair. Still without a bear chair, I might add.
Need a bear chair here, Tom.
All right, good afternoon or good evening. Whatever. I don't care what time it is.
It's good evening.
Really, I've had a shitty day.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right, I had a bad date last night.
Oh, Tom. A bad date? That sucks.
Yeah, it was just one of those blind date things. I don't mind blind dates, but really, sometimes you just have bad dates. That's all there is to it.
Yes, that is true.
And the waiter last night, when we went out to dinner, he's got one of those little line beards. You ever seen these things?
A line beard? I sure have.
Actually, I know you've seen these things. You've tried it a couple of times.
Shut up.
They're ridiculous. Line beards.
Oh, jeez.
Come on. Seriously, why? I relate to this kind of person so little. Anybody who has a line beard. That I don't even know what to say. Come on, what is the point? These turds look like they're wearing masks. Masks labeled douchebag masks. Really. The thing that fascinates me the most is the time and attention it must take to keep this ridiculous look maintained. Tyler, you know the saying, you can't polish a turd?
Yes, I've heard it.
Well, this is sort of like, you can't shave a piece of shit without it looking even shittier. Why are people shaving shit?
I don't know.
Now, and after searching for photos of these creepy jerks for the last 20 minutes so I could show you what I'm talking about...
I know, but...
I just now want to go cry in the shower until I fall asleep. I feel dirty and ashamed.
I'm sorry there.
That's how bad a line beard is.
I'm sorry. You got a top 10?
Yes, I do have a top 10.
Thank you.
Would you like to hear what the top 10 is?
Well, of course. We only got a couple minutes of the show.
The top 10 tonight, since I had a really bad date last night.
Of course.
Is the top 10 signs you've had a bad first date.
Oh, this is going to be good. Knock us dead there, Bear.
And for me, it was a bad only date. For her, I hope she never has a date again.
Oh, that bad. Wow. Okay.
Number 10. Not only is she a little young, but you're sure that you used to date her mother.
Oh! Jeez.
And I can swear, I felt like that all last night. Number 9. She has a thicker mustache than you.
Ouch!
Number 8. You jokingly ask her if she wants to go down to Atlantic City and get married. She then informs you that leaving the state is a violation of her parole.
Oh!
Number 7, her bra and panties are wired to an alarm system, such as my date was last night.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Number 6, at the end of the night, she gives you a coupon that is good for a free shot of penicillin at the nearest clinic. Bad date time there.
Yeah.
Number 5, you wake up the next morning with a wicked hangover. In the bed next to you is Elena Kagan.
Oh, please.
Number 4, at the end of the night, you drop her off at her house. And her pimp is there, waiting to collect your bill. Number 3, you wake up to find your loins covered with purple and green spots with an intense itching in your left thigh.
Oh.
Stop scratching.
Hey, shut up.
Number 2, she informs you that you can't go out again because her boyfriend doesn't like you.
He so wants to laugh.
That's pretty much what I think I ran into last night. And finally, the number 1 sign that you had a bad first date. She's better hung than you.
Oh!
And with that, I'm the bear.
Get out of here.
See you, Tyler.
Yeah, we'll see you later. Oh, man. All right, folks, coming up next Thursday night, I don't know, we're going to play a replay of something. Maybe Late Night with Learman. What do you think? I don't know. We'll have to check the schedule. Folks, we're out of here. Here's a little bohemian like you. We are going to be back tomorrow night. Right here, live on the Bad Side. I'm Tyler Hollywood. Tomorrow, same Tyler time, same Tyler channel, Talk Radio X. Good night.
See what looks Legends.